listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will be here for the whole hour trying to figure out what went wrong with our introduction.
Very strange.
But we'll go past that immediately. You will hear the disclaimer. My apologies to the SEC for not playing our disclaimer. I know we're supposed to, but we weren't in control, obviously.
It plays again at the half hour.
So yes, it does. Okay. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, all the regulars. And for anybody new to the show, either by accident or on purpose, I hope you can stick around for a while. Callers always do go to the head of the line, as the regulars know. And since there's a caller, we're going to interrupt this introductory message to say hello to Bob. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Do I need to get an attorney and go after you guys for not hearing the disclaimer?
Sure, but you can't get blood from this turnip.
Ah, okay. Well, let's talk about healthcare a little bit, okay?
Okay. Yep.
I mean, there hasn't been hardly any conversation in the last couple of years about healthcare.
Hardly at all.
No.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is with all of the conversation about healthcare that's going on, has gone on, about whether or not Obamacare is good, bad, or whether the replacement for it is good, bad, it seems to me that the real essence of it that I don't hear anybody talking very much about is the actual cost, the initial cost, the health cost, the hospital cost, the doctors, what the insurance companies charge for things and so forth. That it seems like no matter what plan you talk about, it won't work if the costs continue to be so high.
And not only that,
I hear the disclaimer.
Not only that, but you're not going to know, the consumer is not going to know what things cost until we decouple the insurance from the payment of the bills and from employment. In order to understand how badly you're getting ripped off or what a good value you have to know. And you won't ask unless you have a reason, a personal reason to ask. So if we all had to be responsible for what we paid out, then we could shop around a little bit. I think it's a multiple level problem. And if you want to trace it back to its origins, I would say Tricky Dicky Nixon.
Really?
It's a little obscure, isn't it?
Why do you say that?
Because he put on the wage and price controls that caused every employer in this country to try to pay their people more, and they wound up implementing these fringe benefit programs because they were barred from paying them higher salaries. And it's very similar in that respect to Milton Friedman's biggest mistake of his life, which was inventing payroll withholding to finance the war. It was only supposed to last as long as the war effort needed to be paid for, but somehow it never went away.
Well, that's typical government, right?
Isn't it, though?
They never let go of, once they get a revenue stream, they are never, almost never let go of it.
Yep. So I think your diagnosis is perfect. I wish I had an answer to how to get the public a little better tuned in to what they're actually paying for their services.
My fear is we're going to continue to focus all our attention on what the right kind of way to deliver health care is, without ever going back and addressing the real problem, as you said, the root problem of why does it cost so much to have health care for someone. I mean, I've had some personal experience with hospital bills, and you look at a bill come in for $9,000 or $10,000 for an hour and a half or 2 hours worth of care that somebody delivered to me, and you say, how could this possibly be? You know, it's just outrageous. The cost is outrageous.
And part of that is you're paying for yourself and two other people.
Well, that's true, yes.
And I don't think that's a problem of providing universal health insurance and universal health care to people. I really don't think that's the answer to that problem. There has to be some transparency somewhere, but I don't believe that's the right way. Something that we around our office and our house have complained about a long time is that the conversation is woven between healthcare and health insurance to the point of interchangeability. And I think you've got a two separate problem industry there. You know, a sixth or seventh of this economy is based on the delivery of healthcare and the provisions for health insurance. And we consider them the same, and they're really not. One of it is how to get it and how much it costs, and the other one is how are we going to pay for it. I think those things have to be separated better.
Is there any kind of an agency or group that is supposed to be focusing on how much something should cost in the way of health care versus how much it, you know, is being charged.
Yeah, it's called Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah, so I don't think there is. Not that I've heard of.
Yeah, it seems to me like we're always establishing agencies and commissions to help look at things, and it seems like that would be a good one to develop. Just to, let's go look at the basic costs of healthcare and find out why an MRI costs $6,000 when it seems like it should cost $60.
I wonder if there are associations of the insurers and things like that, or maybe even physicians or whatever, just associations that are interested in that kind of thing. If so, I don't hear about them.
No, I don't know about them.
Yep. We want a job for your
career. And let you guys talk about it.
Okay. Well, it's a wonderful question, and it is obviously it's an insidious problem and a huge one. Is you can't just ignore 16 or 17 or so percent of the nation's economy and let it run wild. We tried it, didn't work.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I'll ask a trivia question in a little while here. So if you want to call back with an answer, let me know. But okay. We appreciate the call.
Maybe we will. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
We have a client who is a healthcare executive, very smart woman, and I put it to us in a meeting the other day very well, I thought. Mm-hmm. And she said, Obamacare, she is not a conservative by any stretch. She's more independent. But she told us that we took a system in healthcare that wasn't completely broken and completely changed it around and broke it worse than it already was. So there was a way to fix the healthcare system, but Obamacare didn't address those ways. It just created a bunch of new problems, especially from her point of view as a healthcare provider / insurance executive. And it just really wrecked havoc on the system that was already doing okay, but obviously had some holes that we could have just addressed those gaps instead of overhauling the whole system.
And she has recently started a new career in the same business that she's always been in, but it was a startup company, and she was explaining to us some of the things that they're doing. Hey, Bob, if there's an answer to what you were just talking about, this lady is starting it. Trust me.
And it's been a big growth company, too. Yes. She's done very well with it. So I wish her all the best, and I hope that other people are watching what this company is doing.
No kidding. They have become, what's the word I'm looking for? They're proactive with their policyholders. They also are proactive with their deliverers. So she's kind of bridging the gap between the insurance aspect and the care aspect. And just sitting there listening to her talk for about 20 minutes about this thing, Adam and I were both just kind of mesmerized because it made so much sense. Everything she said was absolutely perfectly reasonable, and she was explaining what the results are. They've been in business long enough now to show tangible results, and they are actually cutting the cost of, A, healthcare, and, two, health insurance.
And also improving outcomes for patients.
Exactly. So people can live longer and not spend more money doing it. It's just kind of a win-win. In fact, we usually see her once a quarter at least. And next time, I'll get her into it. In fact, you know, it'd be fun. I'd love to ask her if she could come on the air one Saturday and
talk. Yeah, it would be interesting. I don't know if she could, but it'd be very interesting.
I don't know. It depends on their code of ethics and so on. But if there's one subject that everyone listening to this radio program on any given moment, there's one that encompasses all of us and impacts all of us, that is certainly the one.
No doubt. It's something that every one of us will use during our lifetime.
And this is a significant portion of your money, and when it comes to significant portions of your money, you have my undivided attention.
Yep, $250,000 of healthcare bills for a couple retiring this year.
Yep.
Think about that.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll do the market wrap. I'll give you the trivia question and we'll talk about a very strange week that just went by and some other stuff. And if you want in on it, just pick up the phone and call. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Now that introduction sounded a little more normal.
Yeah, that's more what we're used to.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have some things we need to discuss about the market. But first, I'm going to bring up a trivia question that is about the market, actually. We had a day this week. Boy, did we have a day on Wednesday when all of a sudden the panic button was pressed in some place and a lot of people heard it, I guess. So on this show, we will be the ones that are not afraid to ask, how many of you sold out on Wednesday?
Well, I can tell you, I bought.
Yeah, well, a lot of people did. And out of all of you, be truthful, all of you who thought about it, did you get validated? All of you who did it, did you get back in? We will ask. Anyway, that's just a little fun thing. The trivia question is brought to you by Ken Bales of First Coast Alarm, 636-7888, and it has to do with the market dropping. The S&P on Wednesday dropped under 2%. The NASDAQ was about 2.5%, I believe.
That's correct.
Those are pretty dismal numbers if you're humming along like we were. And, you know, the dollar amounts or the numeric amounts are bigger than the percentage amounts because the markets are high now. But how many times has the S&P 500 dropped more than, you ready for this one, 7% in one day? How many times has the S&P index dropped more than 7% in one day? You think you had a bad day Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ouch. All right, Adam, what happened except for Wednesday? Because it didn't really come out all that badly for the week.
No, if you just look at the week, the net change wasn't that different in the three main indexes. They all dropped about 0.5%, give or take a percent, or a tenth of a percent. So how they got there, though, that's a totally different story. We saw that huge sell-off on Wednesday. The S&P ended up down 1.8%, and as you mentioned, the NASDAQ was down 2.5%. But why? Well,
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people have been waiting to do that. That was part of the reason.
So certain quote-unquote reputable news agencies decided that President Trump has broken countless laws since he got into office and almost will certainly be impeached. What's the evidence of this? I haven't seen any. And you kind of, it makes you wonder why the president hates the press.
Senator Feinstein told us exactly what the evidence was.
What was that?
There's nothing physical, nothing tangible, but she said to an interviewer, we have a lot of rumors and a whole bunch of newspaper stories.
Oh, well then.
That's why the market dropped on Wednesday.
Well, it actually
there's
is.
Some tangible evidence.
That is why the market dropped, but that doesn't really make sense, which is why I bought on Wednesday, because it was such a short-term panic. You could just feel it, and I think part of it was fueled by where the market sits today, what level it's at, and kind of one of those situations where people were just looking out for anything to sell off on, and that was the trigger, but then they realized the error of their ways, so Thursday and Friday ended up being pretty good days.
Well, and it's been months and months and months that people have not really embraced this bull market.
That's true.
In fact, the bullish sentiment is at almost a record low right now, which is a very bullish, that sounds funny.
Yep.
It's a very bullish sign for the market.
I'm going to talk about it a little later, but if you look at the earnings season, it would support buying. But
it certainly would.
So anyways, in fact, the lead story on Yahoo Finance on Wednesday was, quote, this is what happened to the market during Watergate. Really subtle, huh?
Yeah. I mean, oh, we got to use the W word.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoopee, whoopee.
This week, energy, utilities, telecom, and consumer staples, which are sectors that have been really out of favor recently, all rallied this week. And gold and silver both rose around 2% for the week, while oil rose over 3% on some OPEC news. So all of the things that have been pretty bearish kind of reversed course this week and made a little bit of money. One market that didn't rebound this week was Brazil. Their president was accused of taking bribes, and their stock market responded by dropping 12%, and that was even after a 6% rebound on Friday. So
the market was shocked, shocked to find corruption going on in Brazil.
In an emerging market? No way.
And in a country whose last president was summarily impeached and thrown out
right.
because she had dabbled in their oil market to the benefit of,
herself.
Herself,
yeah. It really didn't affect the overall emerging markets category, which has been on fire lately, and that continued this week. So I think for some of the indexes, Brazil makes up a little bit higher percentage of the total emerging markets than others. But
not anymore.
No, but in general, emerging markets actually did pretty well this week, even with the Brazil news.
Yeah, very much.
It was a pretty quiet week for economic data, but what we saw looked pretty good. Housing data was mixed, with home builder sentiment beating expectations, but housing starts and building permits missing. If you look at housing data monthly, though, you can't draw many conclusions, as it is really something you have to look at the trend, as with a lot of these monthly economic reports. And
Maybe we can set up this call before the break, just because we try to do those things. Good morning, Jose.
Yes, good morning. Hey, I don't trust the media at all, none of them. I just want to ask you guys, what has been the real effect of the financial world with Donald Trump? I know he's a business guy, and I know he's doing good for America, but I want to hear from you guys, because that's your world, financial world. Can you tell me? Because the media isn't going to tell me that. That's my question.
We would love to. It's been so positive. If you look at small business sentiment, if you look at large business sentiment, dollars committed to constructing factories, rebuilding, reopening, people being hired. I think you're going to see next, it'll be 2 weeks now, there'll be another jobs report. And I think you're going to see another pickup in that. It takes a while, as you know, to get the land, labor, and capital together to restart a production or start a new production line. But meanwhile, you're putting people like the plumbers and carpenters and so on back to work, getting the stuff ready. So I think for any tradesman right now, they're probably about as busy as they can possibly get.
Yes.
And the numbers will be coming in.
My other question to you is, I'm kind of a little bit iffy about those executive orders. I know they are helping, you know, the people create jobs, but you know how the anti-American Democrats are. As soon as one of them get into the White House, since they are executive orders, they can overturn it that easy. My question to you is, why they don't make it into law?
Well, Trump is signing are undoing some of the things that Obama signed. So a lot of what has gone on so far is nothing more than the cancellation of executive orders that probably never should have been passed in the first place. The real things that matter have been going through Congress, and Trump has signed so far 32 bills coming out of Congress. They're honing in on the two big ones, the health care and the tax reform. And I only have one question to all the people up there. Has anybody seen the Senate? You talk about a know-nothing, do-nothing mess. The Senate is it. And I believe that you are absolutely right. And if we could solve the problems in the Senate, we'd be a lot further ahead. And I just don't have a lot of confidence in McConnell. But he has done some good stuff, too. He promised on the Supreme Court justice that he would delay it until Trump got his way. Well, he did it, and now the justice is on the court. But I do believe in the world of business, you're going to see such a sea change in the next few months in the economic data, the employment figures, and so on, that it will soon be difficult for the dishonest media to lie about what's going on, or to even ignore what's going on.
But back to the question as well, Jose, you're absolutely right. The executive order system is very imperfect, and it was not designed to be used for what it's being used for and what Obama used it for. I think he signed more than any other president prior to him, and Trump may use it more than Obama did, and it's really not designed that way. These big changes are supposed to go through Congress. That's how the system was designed, and it should work. But the politics has gotten so contentious, left versus right, that it's so difficult to pass any type of meaningful legislation that presidents are using this power to kind of get around that process, which I don't really like, but that's the system we're in.
I will predict right now the end of the filibuster as an institution. I don't think we'll ever be able to rise to the 60 threshold in the Senate again, because things are dead on arrival, as they say in the Senate.
True.
So I believe that having been done on most appointments and then having taken it to the Supreme Court justice appointment, now I think they're going to take it to the Senate floor. And then I believe you'll start seeing some stuff get done a lot quicker. Till then, I'm not very optimistic about the speed at which these good things could happen. But you can't convince the business community that things are bad if they believe things are good. And that's what's going to happen. And that's what already has happened. Look who's accompanying Trump right now. The head of Boeing, the head of McDonnell Douglas, the head of this, the head of that. They're going over there. He's over there shaking hands and smiling and having coffee with the important people. But, you know, we have a trade surplus with Saudi Arabia for the first month in the history of man. A surplus? They're buying airplanes and they're buying defenses and such. And it's a phenomenal thing that's going on that you never hear about unless you really dig underneath the headlines. Because the media, as you put it, Jose, the media has this... obsession, I guess is the word I'd use.
That's a good word.
Trump. Yeah. Anyway, would you like the music playing? Would you like to take a shot at the trivia? How many times has the S&P lost more than 7%? It's gone? Okay. He hung up, but he can call back and answer the question. Meanwhile, we're going to pick up the a couple things on the market wrap right after the break, and I got a few things I want to say, and Adam's got a few things he wants to say, but we're more interested in what you all want to say. So if you got something on your mind, please pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. There's certainly no shortage of things to discuss today or next week. All right, we'll be right back. This is Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the newly disclaimed Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Our producer is calling the Orkin line right now to get the bugs out of the system. Shouldn't be long. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape Maintenance. Things are growing. Trust me there. 662-9794. Ask for Troy. Wrapping up the market wrap, Adam had a couple things to say about the earnings season because it was actually concluded this week, and the numbers are not only good, but interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And it also kind of answers Jose's question about what effect Trump has had on the economy. And this is a pretty positive sign. We wrapped up the earnings season this week with Walmart, who reported a nice beat, which is kind of contrary to the trend of bricks and mortar retail.
Wait, I'll talk a little about that too.
Okay. So apparently there is a way to compete with Amazon.
Apparently there is.
They figured it out. 1,500 out of 2,450 companies reporting earnings beat expectations, which is a 61.2% beat rate. Revenue beat rate ended at 63%, which is really fantastic compared to the 40 and 50% rates we've been seeing over the last few years. So,
and that means rising sales, and that means more people are buying things, which means more people are going to work, which means that more people yet will buy things. It is a big cycle, and it's self-fulfilling.
A virtuous cycle, if you will.
Virtuous cycle, yes. Absolutely. Speaking of Amazon, happy birthday. Amazon turned 20 this week. I wish I could go backwards in time.
Yes, me too.
A $100 investment in Amazon 20 years ago this week is today worth $49,000. But when I say it didn't get there in a straight line, that is the biggest understatement ever. In fact, Amazon over 20 years has spent 36% of its time under its prior high.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. When it surges, it surges.
And so many years of that, I don't know exactly, but they had no profit, and they were just in complete growth mode.
If you want to talk about a buy point, though, there was a time when Amazon was selling for 5% of its previous high. We're looking at each other, and the dollar signs are dripping off of us. If only We always said they'll never make a penny. They can grow as big as they want if they can keep selling stock and raising money, but they'll never make a penny. And
especially
one day,
with those prices they sell for, how do they make any money?
Well, then one day he made it. He made a penny.
Yep.
And the stock went to $800. It's still, you are buying sales, not profits.
But no, you're really, definitely not.
You're buying the future. Now, I don't have to like a guy, and I certainly have no respect for Bezos as a person. I hate his politics and so on. But it's pretty hard not to admire what the guy's done.
I mean, it's nothing short of amazing.
It truly is. And it's been certainly at the expense of many others. The death by Amazon index is for real. But as you said, Walmart figured it out.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
No.
It's just it changes the landscape, and those that aren't going to change are going to fail.
He's making people think, and that ultimately is a good thing.
Definitely.
Speaking of the economy and of leading indicators, John Deere came in this earnings season. The things that I look at are things like Caterpillar and Deere, because you're going to see them pick up before you see a lot of other things pick up, because people have to buy those to create the opportunity that's coming in 6 months, a year, year and a half, whatever. So a year ago, Deere made $1.56 a share. The consensus estimate for this year was that they would be up from 156 to 163. They just reported 249. Just knocked them out of the park. Sales rose from $495 million to $802 million.
Wow.
In the same quarter, year over year. You know what that means, folks? It means the farmers are buying. It also means the construction people are buying. Caterpillar's worldwide sales have stopped falling. They've ticked up in many areas. The economy is not only responsive to Trump domestically, but the world economy is also doing the same thing. This is a good thing. Stay tuned.
All right.
Eventually, like I said, the media is going to be unable to cover up the truth. All right. You should probably tell the folks a little bit about who we are and anything else you would like to bring up before the fourth quarter comes in, when I'll be ranting about something probably.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yep. We are fee-only fiduciaries and financial planners located in Jacksonville Beach. We're right off of Butler Boulevard, easy to get to from everywhere in the city. If you ever want to reach us in the office, just call us at 685-1505, or you can find us online. Our phone number is on the website as well. We're at vanwiefinancial.com. If you need help spelling that, it's VANWIE, or for those of you in the military, Victor Alpha November Whiskey India Echo. And our website has a lot of cool features. We do a blog where we update once or twice a week, and that has a lot of topics that we cover on the radio, some that we don't. We also have a way to book a meeting. You just click a button on our website and you can look at our calendar, see what's available, and schedule to come in for your free 1 hour consultation, where we'll sit down with you and go over your personal financial situation and see if there's a reason that we should do business together. So either give us a call or get on our website and come in and see us.
Okay.
And in the next segment, I wanted to answer a question that we got last week from a caller named Jay. It was about a company called DLP Investments, and he asked what our thoughts were on them, but we weren't familiar with them. We thought it sounded like a private REIT offering, but I wanted to do a little bit more research before offering an opinion. So I did that this
week. That's a difference between youth and me. I'll give you an opinion anyway.
I did a little research this week, and according to the DLPCapitalAdvisors.com website, they offer funds that deliver high yields with low risk. This is one of my least favorite phrases in the world of finance.
You and me.
That's how things like variable annuities are sold, and we all know our thoughts on those. Those funds at DLP, it turns out, are a variety of real estate-related investments, but not just in the private REIT space. For instance, they have a fund called the DLP Fixed Fund 2. This fund is open only to accredited investors with $100,000 or more to invest, and it offers fixed returns between 6.5% and 10%. They do this by loaning the money in this fund to their other funds in the form of a note. They claim this is the least risky fund of all their funds, as the investors in this fund are first to get paid out before all the other investors in all the other funds. It pays monthly, and the return depends on the amount you invest, as well as the term that you agree to lock your money up with them. For instance, investing $100,000 for 1 year pays 6.5%, while investing $1 million for 5 years pays 10%. And what they don't
10%.
10%. And what they don't mention is how much of that is return of capital, how much of that is dividends, how much of that is other forms of income. They don't break that down at all.
It's becoming more annuity-like every moment, isn't it?
They also offer a fund that invests directly in multifamily housing units. This one promises a 7 to 8% return during the investment period and then twice the initial investment paid back in the wind down period.
Which is how long?
They claim that the targeted annual return to investors is 17%. And this fund locks their money up for 10 years, but redemptions are available with 180 days notice. And it didn't say if there was a penalty on that or not.
My targeted age is 49.
For?
Me. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm 66.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
Uh-huh. So 17% targeted return might be tougher yet.
So there's several other funds available with many of the same restrictions as the first two I mentioned. DLP was formed in 2013 when a guy named Don Wenner decided to form the company out of a private lending business. They claim to have $200 million in assets under management while having about $100 million in revenue and over 200 investors. I don't know enough about the company to say if they're good or bad, but it's not somewhere I would put my money just due to the transparency, liquidity, and the sales tactics of calling this high risk or high return for low risk. I just don't like it.
$200 million in assets under management and $100 million in income.
Well, they buy multifamily housing units. So all those rents, I'm sure they're including in their income.
Okay.
So I think that math probably makes sense.
That it was.
There's a lot of expenses that go with multifamily units as well. So you have to take those out of the revenue.
Revenue and earnings are not the same.
Correct. So, I don't know. I just don't like the very first thing on the website says high return, low risk, and that scares me. So.
Right. And last week I explained, this is something that you can't say this often enough, the difference between liquid and marketable. A lot of people think liquidity means that you can sell it anytime you want to and get your money back. Well, that's not the definition of liquidity. That's the definition of marketability. You can sell something right now, but for liquidity, you have to say you have to get all of your money back. If it has a chance to be less than you put in, it's marketable. If it has no chance, then it's liquid. If it's truly liquid, I promise you, you're not going to get a great big return on it. Nobody is dumb enough to promise you, well, they're smart enough to promise you, but nobody's dumb enough to actually give you that money. All right, we'll be right back. One more break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And at this moment, I would like to just take a minute and say, Happy Armed Forces Day.
Oh, great.
20th of May, the 3rd May, the 3rd Saturday in May every year, started by Harry S. Truman the year before I was born. In fact, the first one was actually celebrated the year I was born in 1950. And it was called Teamed for Defense because what they did was put all the branches of our military, Air Force, Army, Coast Guard, Marine Corps, and Navy, under one department for the first time. How about that? There was a fellow named Elmer Davis who was the head of the War Communications or War Information Department in World War II under Roosevelt. And he said, this nation will remain the land of the free so long as it is the home of the brave. It's kind of hard to say it that way because there are extra words in what we're used to, but we'll be the land of the free if we have the home of the brave.
Nice.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yep, and thank you all for your service.
Yep. All right, headlines. You know me and my headlines. I just love doing headlines. People say things, write things, and my wife will always point out to me, the people who write the article don't necessarily write the headlines, that we're sure of, but Adam was talking about that high return, low risk thing. That's one of the many leads that people bring in for things like this. I heard this on the radio the other day. Whatever company will show you, whatever person will show you how to retire in 2 to 5 years. Your age is not important.
Okay.
So, Adam, have you taken the course yet?
I haven't. I should, though.
Well, yeah, because by somewhere between age 42 and 45, you could be retired.
That sounds fantastic.
It does, doesn't it? Why don't I believe it?
Don't know.
Why would anybody say something so stupid? It's just mind-boggling what people get away with. All right, here's another one. This is also from Wednesday. Congress gives Florida homeowners huge bailout.
Oh, you know what? I had someone email me about that this week. You know what they're talking about, right?
HARP.
HARP, yeah.
The Home Affordability Refinance Program, which is not a Florida thing.
No, it's a nationwide thing. And it also isn't a bailout. All it does is allows you to refinance if you're underwater. That's it.
Yeah. You still owe the money, people.
Yeah.
All right. Remember the related one? Congress gives you a tax break that pays off your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? In other words, they made the tax deduction for sales tax permanent in the last law. Before that, for about 10 years, it was renewed annually. And apparently, by deducting sales tax and getting some money back, you're required to put that down on your mortgage, which
and it's going to pay
off. You've got to spend some serious money to get enough of a tax break to pay off your mortgage.
That's a big tax
break. You got a mortgage like mine?
Yeah.
Weird. All right. How about this one? Easily the number one stock to own for 2017. Then you go to that site, said average investors are making millions.
Millions?
Trust me on one thing. If average investors were making millions, everybody'd already be there. People, is it me? Friday, forget Social Security. If you own a home, do this.
What is it?
I don't know. I won't even go there. Forget Social Security after what I've been through in my life? Heck no. I love that Tuesday every 4 weeks or so. All right, how about this one? Hey, you, Adam, you're going to love this one. This is also from Friday. Vanguard Fund destroys the S&P 500. Now, it didn't say the Vanguard S&P 500 fund destroys the S&P 500, did it?
So what did they do? Just pick a time period and find a Vanguard fund that outperformed the S&P 500?
Consumer staples.
Okay.
So my apple will beat your orange every day of the week.
But consumer staples has been pretty weak this year.
Yes, it has. But over time, it's been very good.
Yeah, but if
you pick the right time frame, it's been excellent.
This year to date, its performance has actually been under the S&P 500.
Exactly. But why in the world would anybody compare that fund to the S&P 500 when the only similarity they have is that they're comprised of large cap funds or large cap stocks?
They'll have some overlap in the stocks that they hold.
It's one out of however you decide to break down the S&P 500. Some people do 19, some do 17, some do 12. But it's one little segment of the S&P. But you can't compare a broad index with a narrow little piece of the market. If you have a conclusion and you're looking for data with the computers and history that are online now, you can always find it. You can find data to support almost any stupid thing you want to say. I just hope people don't read this stuff. It's just incredible. All right, well, what happens? How much money do you have to save to be a millionaire based on a tax-deferred 6% savings account like a 401k? Well, it's dependent on one big thing. Your age. You want to see the value of getting started early? I have it right here. Thank you to the people at NerdWallet. Never been to NerdWallet, NERDWALLT. It's really cool. they have a plethora of dumb stuff that if you like sort of thing, and I do. So if you're 23, you save $14 a day, and under those circumstances, you'll have a million. $14 a day?
Seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah. If you wait till 30, that becomes 21. Not too bad. Wait till 35, that becomes 30 a day. Wait till 40, now it's 42 a day. The chart ends there because the news is so dismal after that.
It really goes up exponentially after that.
It really does. So if you are under 40 and you want to have some money when you're older, I would strongly suggest you get started.
Think about this. If you are in your early 20s and you start saving $30 a day, you will most likely have over a couple million bucks. So think about that, young people.
Absolutely true. Now, let's talk about the value of having $1 million.
Not what it used to be.
No. The people who study these things, and I'm really glad there are people who study these things because it's more fun to look them up than it is to actually do them. There is a big push on in this country among, shall we say, the other side of the political spectrum for the $15 an hour minimum wage. So these people took a look at it and said, okay, what if that happened? So say you went to get some chicken McNuggets, 10-piece McNuggets today, cost you $4.49. Under $15, that's $6.20. How about a 6-inch turkey sub at Subway? It's 4 1/4 now. It would be $5.87. A Whopper meal at Burger King, $6.49 today, $8.96 at $15 an hour.
Ouch.
Taco Bell, $5.99 for the Crunchwrap Supreme. You probably know what that is. I don't. But anyway, $5.99 would go to $8.27.
I don't eat a Taco Bell.
I don't eat a Taco Bell. You don't?
No.
You used to.
Yeah, when I was young and foolish.
Well, and hungry. Chick-fil-A, chicken sandwich combo, $5.95. That would be $8.21. We're talking overnight now, folks. Pizza Hut. This one will hit you hard. A medium hand-tossed cheese pizza at Pizza Hut, $11.95 today, $16.55.
That's outrageous.
It is. So what happens if you give people money and then you charge them more for everything that they have to do?
They end up the same.
Except probably worse off for a simple reason. Taxes. Progressive tax structure. So this, you can file that under... Be careful what you wish for. And speaking of other ways to get in trouble, since I'm kind of on this bug today, the SEC halted some fraud the other day on an unregistered firm. A guy's name is Muhammad Abdi Ahmed, and his company was called Two Way Trading LLC. They've been giving investment advice to clients since 2014. Not registered, been barred from the business, and spent most of that time in jail. He just did it again, people.
Sounds like a recipe for success.
Check out your advisors. If you're not...
Yeah, go to brokercheck.com or .org, and that will tell you where they're registered. And if it's with the SEC, please make sure that they are registered.
And if it's with the state, make equally sure they're registered. We are state registered in the state of Florida. Check out the qualifications of the people you're about to deal with. Ask around a little bit. Look for websites. See if there's any experience. Listen to radio shows. All those things. But don't get your faces ripped off.
Broker Check is actually with FINRA, so it will tell you state registration as well.
Yep, and you'll find us there. You'll find us here next week at the same time. Even though it is the holiday weekend, we are always here, have no intention of ever missing a show, so don't you miss one either. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.